Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, Lucid talked to a lot of research and, of course, plenty of talk over the weekend about the outcome of the political findings, but also the spotlight on some other research they carried out. I want to speak to Bill White from Lucid Talk. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Bill, it's a sad reality, but considering what we've just been hearing from Rodney Edwards, fewer than half of women in Northern Ireland feel safe on our streets. That's a very sad reflection on society, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is, Frank. I mean, the overday question was, do you feel safe? It's a simple question. Do you feel safe on the streets of Northern Ireland? It was a 3,100 Northern Ireland representative sample, males, females, Catholics, Protestants, all over Northern Ireland, as I've said before. So it's a little micro Northern Ireland, if you like. So it's pretty representative. And overall, 62% said they feel safe. 29% felt they weren't. But that's the overall result. And your point's a good one. When we analyze that by male and female, that's when the difference comes in. 75% of males feel safe on the streets of Northern Ireland. Only 18% think they don't feel safe, which is still like nearly one in five. But the dramatic contrast comes when we look at female respondents only. And only 49%, as you've just said, less than half of females in Northern Ireland feel safe on the streets of Northern Ireland. 40% say they don't feel safe, and then 11% say they don't know, not sure, which even is not a very good answer either. It's not good to feel don't know, not sure about that. You want to be sure and you want to feel safe on the streets of Northern Ireland, I would have thought. So there's a big difference between what males and females think about safety on the streets in Northern Ireland, Frank.
Did you carry out this research before or after the horrific murder of Aisling Murphy?
It was after, Frank. It was just on the previous weekend to this weekend. So that was the previous week. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe the terrible murder of Aisling in the Republic of Ireland. So yes, it was done after that. So whether that has had an impact or not, it's, you know, obviously current news events always have an effect on what people think at the time. I still think we would have got roughly these results, Frank, to be honest. I don't think it's had that dramatic effect on the results, you know. But so it's still, there's a huge difference between what males and females think about this issue, and it's, you know, it's interesting to note that. It's interesting to note as well, we obviously do all the other analyses, you know, by area, by age group, etc. It's interesting that Belfast is the area where, you know, people feel less safe. So if you like, it's the females within Belfast who feel the most less safe, if I could put it that way. I'm not too sure I'm putting it the right way, but I'm sure people know what I mean. If you look at then the east of Northern Ireland, outside Belfast, North Down, etc., that's when the figures go, you know, more and more people feel safer in those sort of areas when compared to Belfast. And then again, Frank, that's pretty typical of all over the UK and elsewhere. I mean, people, it has to be said, people in urban areas are more concerned about safety on the streets because there's just more people in a closed area, in a big urban area like London or Manchester or Belfast or Dublin, you know. So, but it's worth noting. It's worth noting, you know, the difference between urban and rural in this area.
Of course. Did you get any sense of what women in particular are most fearful of? Is it a fear of literally being attacked and being raped or being strangled? Or is it a fear of just encountering someone who will make you feel uncomfortable, someone who's going to say something to you or stare at you or just, intrude in some less serious but every bit as important to be rejected way?
Well, no, we didn't, Frank. Actually, we didn't get into that detail. We do pick up all the comments from the, you know, there's a voluntary comments box, but that's voluntary. So a lot of people, you know, fill in the poll and they don't complete the poll and they don't leave any comments. But we picked up that they felt there was, yes, maybe your latter point, that there was a, they felt, you know, unsafe in certain areas of Belfast. They felt unsafe in certain areas of towns, etc., again, back to this urban-rural split. But we didn't get it. There was no real, no, we didn't ask. We didn't research that specifically, why they didn't feel safe. Frank, I suppose that's really open to debate and people's experience. And asking, dare I say, asking females why we feel that females feel, you know, less safe on the streets of Northern Ireland than males do, and particularly in urban areas. But it is certainly quite a surprising, you know, I find it quite a surprising result that less than half of females feel safe on the streets of Northern Ireland. I mean, that's what the poll is showing.
It is very worrying, very worrying. Bill, thank you very much indeed. Alison Morris has been writing about this in the Belfast Telegraph. Alison, you will understand why women are fearful at this minute in time.
I think after we have incidents like the Sarah Everard murder and then the Aisling Murphy murder, when you have incidents like that, people immediately, it brings back, I suppose, those fears that you know, women and girls have from a very young age, that they're going to be attacked by a stranger in the street. And we do know that those type of attacks are very rare. And we do also know that, you know, despite our troubled past, Northern Ireland's actually quite a safe place to live in terms of, you know, crime, street crime, in terms of the like of muggings and robberies and those sort of things were quite low compared to what you'd see in other sort of urban cities and places, you know, across maybe places like Dublin or Limerick or other parts of the UK. But that kind of attack, I think, is something that people fear most. And that's why, you know, women take so many precautions when they're going anywhere and having to return from a night out and how things, you know, you have to plan ahead. And you could see the difference in the Lucid Talk poll when it came to the safety of women and the safety of men. You know, men overwhelmingly, over 75%, felt that they were safe on the streets of Northern Ireland, whereas women, it was the other way around. You know, they felt that they were unsafe, and that shows where that's coming from. But then those figures, again, if you drill down, they asked, was there a major problem with domestic violence in Northern Ireland, and that changed quite considerably. You can see that people are not only afraid in the street, but they do feel that there's a major problem with violence in the home as well. Both of those figures, I thought, when I looked at them, they were quite stark and quite sobering.
When a woman is on the streets and feeling fearful, understandably, on the back of what happened to Aisling Murphy, anyone who is out jogging or walking or just going to or from work would be concerned about that form of attack. Thankfully, those attacks are few and far between, but one like that is obviously one too many. I just wonder, are women afraid of a lot of other things? Are they afraid because there will be unwelcome intrusion? There will be some form of comment made. There will be staring. There will be people who just are being a pest. Is that a constant fear for women?
I think it is. I mean, we do know that women are more likely to be murdered by someone they know than someone they don't. But, you know, I mean, I have a very, very large, you know, group of female friends, and every one of them has a story of being harassed, whether that be in the workplace or whether that be in just, you know, trying to do the shopping or coming home from a night out, or, you know, getting into a taxi and the driver made you feel uncomfortable. Or there's times that, you know, there's unwanted advances. And for women, you know, you'll see that they try and sort of ward those off with a smile on their face as pleasantly as possible, because they know that outright rejection to someone like that might turn nasty and turn into an attack. And, you know, during the last week, I think there was a lot of talk about the precautions women take. So you might walk a much longer route because it's better lit. You know, phoning friends and saying, right, I'm about to get into a taxi, here's the registration, you know, phone me when I get home. You know, carrying keys. You know, I remember often when I was, you know, younger, carrying, putting my hand inside my bag on a can of hairspray, thinking if someone jumps out of me, I'll spray this in their eyes and run, and that will give me time to get away, and those sort of things. And I mean, in the course of my job, I have been, you know, sexually harassed when I've been out and about doing my job. And, you know, male journalists also can get abuse, especially back when we were covering those, you know, nasty sort of parading disputes and the sort of trouble that existed around the summer. outside courts, when I do a lot of court reporting, you know, I got a lot of abuse. But the abuse I got was always different in nature. It would always been sexual. You know, my male colleagues might have had some abuse shouted at them, but anything that happened to me, it was always using really, you know, vague sexual slurs or shouting sexual comments at you. And I think that that's where the difference is. You know, we know that men are at risk from violence as well, but I do think that the thing is that men are at risk of violence from other men, whereas women are at risk of violence from men. It's the perpetrators. And I keep on sort of referring back to the Gillen report, where he looked at, you know, how the judicial system from bottom up deals with, you know, sexual reports of sexual crime and harassment. And one of the things that was very important, and I don't think that we've made enough strides, and COVID obviously had something to do with that, is, you know, education in schools and teaching young men and young women what normal, healthy relationships look like and healthy interaction and all of that, you know. And I think that that's very important to change. And, it, you know, it can change. I think that, you know, younger men are more aware of that maybe than people, you know, in the middle age who still think it appropriate to sometimes to make, you know, inappropriate comments or think that inappropriate comments are in some way funny or hilarious when they're no such thing. You know, we have workplace protections now for people, so they can't be harassed in the workplace. But interestingly, you know, we've no such like protections for girls in schools, you know. And I hear all the time about, you know, teenage girls being harassed by boys in school, and yet there's no such protections for them. And I think that all of that needs looked at. But I mean, there is a real issue. We live, you know, in a society that was emerging from conflict, and it is very patriarchal. And I know that people called it non-patriarchy at one stage, but that's exactly what it was. And sometimes those sort of very old views and old views towards women and girls, you know, still exist and pop their heads up. Thankfully, they're getting less and, you know, they're getting fewer as we go along. And hopefully there will become a time, you know, when we manage to, you know, make a generation of young people who are forward thinking and treat each other equally and treat each other with respect.
Can this message be linked in any way to the advice given to people not to crack jokes? And you touched on it there, but how far back do we go in relation to what is acceptable humour and what is unacceptable humour? There's a great debate at present whether or not Doug Beattie should have retweeted a joke that made reference to him and his wife, and a reference to Edwin Poots and his wife. Someone else, of course, had written the joke. Someone else had relayed the joke. But the joke had a detrimental effect on Mrs. Poots because it linked her to whether or not she would know what the inside of a brothel looked like. That sounds very, very insulting. Some people will say it was humorous. Obviously, Mrs. Poots would be offended by it. Should Doug Beattie have known better? Should everyone know better not to retweet the like of that?
Do you know, Frank, and you've been sort of the same generation. Can you think back to when we, you know, the 70s, 80s and even in the 90s, and some of those comedy programmes that would have been on a Friday and Saturday night that were considered sort of family entertainment? And if you were to watch reruns of them now, you'd be absolutely horrified at some of the jokes and the fact, you know, think of that sort of Benny Hill type humour, you know, Jim Davison type humour, that sort of real end of the pier, sort of crude, lewd, and women were always the butt of those jokes. And it's okay saying, you know, that different generations view that humour differently. I mean, the reason why those things don't exist on television anymore and those people are no longer household names is because that humour was inappropriate. You know, it had all sorts of misogynistic connotations in some cases. You know, that some of those jokes, you know, they were aimed at people of ethnic minorities, were racist. You wouldn't get away with any of that today. And I do think, you know, there are sometimes you hear, you know, very, very old people saying things and, you know, you cringe at how inappropriate they are, but say, well, you know, I'm going to assume that, you know, they just have lived such closeted lives that they are unaware that what they've said is incredibly offensive. But, I mean, the leader of a political party should have known that that wasn't funny. I mean, to have a joke at the expense of your colleagues or even your political rivals is one thing, but to be sort of dragging their spouses and their female relatives into it is another, especially after the couple of weeks that we've had. I know that he deleted it very quickly and apologised, but it made me wonder, you know, the fact that at no point before he tweeted that did he go, is this appropriate or inappropriate? I went ahead with it, shows I think a lapse of judgment completely.
He has, of course, deleted it. He later apologised as well. Simon Hoare, the MP, who's the chair of the House of Commons Northern Ireland Affairs Committee, apparently retweeted Mr. Beattie's post that emerged last night. He deleted it as well.
And these people are in positions of, you know, authority and importance, and they should know better. Like, they generally should know better. I mean, we talk about educating young people in schools to know what's appropriate and what's healthy. Do we need to send, you know, a load of middle-aged men back to school to teach them what's appropriate and healthy as well? You know, and when you're leading a party, especially what Doug Beattie has been trying to do with Ulster Unionists, and to try and turn it into, you know, a more progressive, forward-thinking Unionist party, and going out, and especially that, you know, attracting young women like Julianne Corr and people like that into the ranks of it, to try and change that sort of male pale scale image. You have to be then aware of the fact that your words have consequences to them. You know, being the leader of a political party is not an easy feat. It's something that comes with great responsibility, and with great responsibility there should be, you know, if I was doing media training, I would have said, do you need to read that and think of the cold light of day? Is that actually funny or is that offensive? And I don't think that anybody, when they looked at that, you know, impartially would have looked at that and thought, well, that's not offensive. I know there's some men who try to defend it online since just humour, and you've all lost your sense of humour. I certainly haven't lost my sense of humour. There's, you know, there's probably things I find hilarious, but, you know, someone's more fun of the, at the sort of female relative or the spouse or the wife of a political opponent, I don't think was very funny. And I know, I'm sure that Mrs. Poots didn't think it would be very funny either. It was the other way around. And Edwin Poots had tweeted that joke about Doug Beattie's wife, but he thought it was funny then.
Yeah, Mrs. Poots, the wife of the agriculture minister, apparently genuinely upset by the joke. Do you think more will be made of this on the countdown to the election, or will a line be drawn under it?
And it was also written in the Telegraph today in my other column about, you know, the Lucid Poll talk and where the politicians were. It's interesting that when politicians are doing well, and they're doing well in the polls and things are going well for them, that there's a tendency to sit back and relax too much and then often self-sabotage and sabotage their own election campaign. And that's what, you know, people like Doug Beattie need to be careful of, you know, that if he is doing well and he's shown that he was one of the most popular leaders, that he doesn't then carry out an act of self-sabotage, thinking that everything's all cosy and rosy. But it's more than that, you know, it's more than, you know, whether or not it's going to damage you politically. It's to do with your attitudes, you know. And I know that Doug Beattie was in the army, and there's that sort of humour that people thought was, you know, hilarious in those very male-dominated circles, because, you know, in a modern world where he has colleagues who are equal to him in every respect of the way, you know, female colleagues, that's not funny. You know, he's not back in the barracks now. You know, these things, he needs to consider what he's saying when he's making jokes like that. It'll be interesting, because we know by the polls, you know, that the DUP still aren't polling very well. They have an awful body of work to do to try and get some sort of bounce back before May. And Sinn Féin are doing well. And it's interesting, because all they really seem to need to do now is do nothing, basically. But as we know, you know, scandals can come along, you know, politicians can say things that backfire on them, as Doug has over the weekend, and things can go wrong between now and then, which is why the build-up to elections is always so interesting for people like ourselves, Frank.
I have to agree with you on that, but as you say there, but for the grace of God go any of us, because if we look back over the last 50 years of our lives, I can look back over 50, I'm not sure if you can or not, Alison, but the bottom line is, you know, I'm sure we all have things that could come back to embarrass us. But
I'm very, very grateful social media did not exist when I was growing up, Frank, is all I can say, because
correct.
I'm not sure they would have allowed me to be a journalist if they had seen videos of my antics in my teenage years. I feel sorry for young people now that every aspect of their life is documented.
I agree entirely with you, and I wouldn't like to be judged on things that I got up to years and years and years ago. But the point is,
I don't want to know, Frank. I don't want to know. Even
the point is, and this is important, this is 2022. We've got to know where we are today, and that's the crucial thing. And that's, we shouldn't get tripped up today. And, you know, hopefully you won't, hopefully I won't, and Doug Beattie probably wishes he had just stopped tweeting on Saturday night or whenever.
Well, I mean, I would have before COVID would have done periods of media training, and I always say, you know, if you're sitting down and you're relaxed and you're in the house and you have a drink in your hand, put your phone away.
It's good advice. It is good advice. Yeah. It is. Alison, always good to talk to you. Thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
Alison Morris from the Belfast Telegraph.
The U105 phone-in with...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.